I'm Julia Paskin. Join me as I talk with NPR's Sarah McCammon about her new book, The Ex-Evangelicals, Loving, Living, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. That's April 25th at the Crawford. Tickets at las.com/events.
It's Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Several months ago, we talked about the documentary Circus of Books. It details the story of the Circus of Bookstores in West Hollywood and Silver Lake, operated by Karen and Barry Mason. They got into the book-selling and video-selling business rather accidentally, but became real pillars of the LGBTQ communities. Rachel Mason is the daughter of the couple behind Circus of Books, and she directed a documentary about her parents and their stores. Here's a portion of that conversation. We start off with a clip from the film.
We never talked about it.
It was just known that that's how the family worked. You don't talk about family business in the family.
If anyone asked us what our parents did, the official answer was run a bookstore.
We own a bookstore. That's what you tell people.
There were times we had to get to the store because mom was driving us home and needed to stop by. And we were under strict instructions to stare down at the ground the entire time we were passing through certain areas of the store.
Don't look around, look at the floor. But obviously, you know, wandering eyes.
And what was on those shelves were hardcore gay films, videos, sex toys, and the like. Rachel, thanks so much for being with us to talk about your film and your families. Good to have you on Film Week.
It's nice to be here. Thank you very much, Larry.
So, Rachel, let's talk about that lack of knowledge. I love the scene in the film where you describe how you found out the type of bookstore that your parents operated. Did each of your siblings find out in his own way?
Well, you know, I think at first when I was a kid, I just assumed every store had an over 18 section. And, you know, we were actually raised rather strictly. You know, we were not allowed to eat very much candy because it would rot your teeth out. So when we would walk into the store, the first thing we would ever notice as kids was the candy selection. And, you know, I think it gives you some sense of what a kid's perspective is. But as I got older and I joined full force with the LGBT community in my school, and I was part of I would say the outsiders gang of kids who were obsessed with anything that was countercultural. My friends were the ones that were going to that store and revealed to me just how exciting and fun that store was. And I thought it was very strange because my parents were not exciting and fun and interesting people. And, you know, I'm from Hollywood, so I went to school with people that had much more cool parents than mine and, you know, were artists and actors and producers, and my parents were, I thought, very boring small business owners.
Little did you know.
Right.
I went to Hollywood High, so I had a similar experience. What high school did you go to?
Well, I actually went to school in Reseda at Cleveland High School in the Valley, but it was an hour-long ride for me, and I would have gone to Hollywood. But I think in the 90s at that time, Hollywood was experiencing some sort of a drop. I don't remember what the reasons were, but my mom, you know, very hardcore about academics, had discovered that Cleveland was a really good high school, and I, you know, took an hour and a half long bus ride every day to get there from West Hollywood. And it was a great school, but yeah, as you know, living in Hollywood, there's lots of interesting people with interesting parents, and those were not my parents. My parents were really boring.
Well, let's talk about their backgrounds. Your mother had been a newspaper reporter in Ohio. Your dad had worked in effects in the movies before inventing a device used in kidney dialysis. How did they make the transition to start distributing sexually explicit material?
Well, you know, I think the operative word is decision. It wasn't exactly a decision. It was more like they were hoping that my dad's dialysis machines would take off. And of course, he was up against the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world that, you know, very easily wipe out the little guy. But, you know, in the 70s, it was a different environment. And, you know, you could sort of be a maverick and start, you know, and see what would happen. And so I think they were both really hoping that my dad would have a very amazing career in dialysis. And of course, it was so difficult that they took up a little sideline gig, which was delivering Hustler. And I didn't realize until I actually interviewed Larry Flint, who told me personally that they were his first distributors here in LA, that, you know, they got this ad in the LA Times and responded to it, and were just really great small-time local distributors of Hustler. And then Larry Flint, of course, started what's sort of an unknown chapter in LGBT history, is that he was an early champion, because he simply, just like my parents, said, okay, I can take up these other magazines that happen to be gay, which at that time was pretty radical because there were so few gay publications. And those were early magazines like Blue Boy, Honcho, Mandate. And those magazines on my parents' delivery route were very popular at this one store called Book Circus.
And well, just a second, because I want to play the clip from the film about how this sort of distribution part of the business began with your dad driving these publications all around Los Angeles. Barry and Karen explain how, along with Larry Flint in this clip, how they realized that these magazines could be real moneymakers.
Meanwhile, Flint took over other magazine companies. So now we had several gay titles.
We had Blue Boy.
Blue Boy was one of the first really successful gay publications that was not underground. They had trouble finding a distributor, and they came to me.
And then he got other ones, Honcho and Mandate, which were all the top gay magazines at the time. We had even thousands of titles, knitting magazines, woodworking, guns, you name it.
New York Review of Books.
Yeah, fine, good magazines. We would try and get the better magazines. And they sold it to
better?
Us.
The better?
Like New York Times Review
of
Books.
No, the New York Review of Books never sold very well. What sold well was Hustler.
I love that clip because the dynamics of your mom and dad in that.
I know, she's such a hardcore businesswoman. It's, you know, it does. Ironically, she's also very academic and loves lots of books. But, you know, when it comes to business, Hustler really did sell the best of everything.
And so you mentioned Book Circus is this store in West Hollywood that your father is distributing the magazines to. How did he go from selling them these explicit magazines into taking over the store?
Well, you know, it's, again, a very funny twist that I think makes you remember, I think, L.A. in the 70s as a much different time. I don't know why, but I feel like this film sort of encapsulates a different environment in which things happened, a more fly-by-night kind of fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants sort of environment. And there was a store that just they were delivering to, and lo and behold, it couldn't pay its bills, and a series of different things happening with some people getting very deeply involved in drugs, and my parents sort of accidentally realizing that, you know, if they could pay the rent, they could take over this store. And they just went right up to the landlord and said as much, and she said okay. And so they did, and little did they know they were getting involved in a store that had the attention of a lot of people in the adult industry, including mafia people. And so my dad makes a funny joke that everything was fine except that some people threatened to kill him. And, you know, there was some early drama around their overtaking of the store. But, you know, they really just did it because it was kind of a smart, very quick seeming decision, you know, like, we may as well, they owe us some money and we can pay the rent and the store looks like it's doing well. So, you know, they were just, it was sort of like a quick business decision. And I think it was pretty brilliant if you were open-minded enough at the time to be in this industry.
Let's though listen to this selection from the film, which tells about the importance of Circus of Books. It features LA LGBTQ activist Alexei Romanov, one of the last people alive who was at the famous Black Cat demonstration in Silver Lake when police came in on a New Year's Eve to roust the patrons of that establishment. In this clip, Romanov talks about why the bookstore was so important.
From that incident came demonstrations against police brutality outside of the oldest gay bars in Los Angeles, the Black Cat and the New Faces. It was the largest demonstration in the country at the time. and it was 2.5 years before Stonewall. The new faces became the circus of books. That bookstore was really important because there was literature in them that had to do with our lives. I mean, we were the unspoken, hidden people that you never talked about because they were disgusting.
You see, hear about the importance, the central role of circus of books for gay men to meet. It was the social environment, not just what was sold there. But Rachel, your parents went through the worst of the AIDS pandemic when they lost employees, customers, when the communities that they were in suffered devastating effects from the AIDS pandemic. And that, I mean, that's particularly poignant. When you were a kid and going through this, did you have a sense of the devastation?
You know, I think, again, this is why I felt such a need to make this film, because I realized only years later as an adult that I knew people who would tell me about losing all their friends. And then I remember thinking, wow, when I was a kid, I remember all the clerks that I thought were so wonderful and all these different people that would come and go. And then I would just ask my parents about them and they might say something like, oh yeah, well, John just died last week. Oh, and this guy, he was great. Bill, well, you know, or this person here, Mike, well, he just died. And that guy died. And this guy died. And I had a child's perspective on a kind of constant amount of death for a window of time. And these were just such fantastic, wonderful men. I just loved them. And I just thought they were really cool. You know, at an early age, I think I might have had an affinity for the fantastic, beautiful gay flair that has come to become my entire life. I'm very surrounded by, you know, the LGBT community, but particularly gay men. And so I realized later I had witnessed a really alarming amount of death without sort of knowing it, and knowing that I was in the center of an epidemic by proxy to the store. When I got older, I just had a thought process about it that really led me to feel a kind of memorial for this entire era that I do feel we have not fully grasped the entirety of, even now.
Your parents speak with great affection about the people close to them, employees and others, who were lost to AIDS. And yet at the same time, when your brother, one of your brothers, came out to them while in college and home on break, your father, very accepting of that, but your mother, because of her conservative Judaism, had a real difficult time with this. And how was this for her, recounting this? I mean, she's made a journey to great acceptance and, in fact, is very involved in gay rights now. But was that tough for her?
My mom has become this kind of almost like a poster child. She says it in the movies. I'm a poster child for a parent that had a really bad reaction, and I wish I could take it all back. And I love that she admits to that, because she had the worst possible reaction, because my mom is very devout and very biblical in her thinking, and always was. And, you know, she really was a person that I think had a kind of fundamentalist biblical view. We were raised in the more conservative, bordering Orthodox Jewish version, which is conservative culturally. And as ironic as it is that these people would have a gay porn store that couldn't have been less culturally conservative, my mom was completely the other way. You know, and I remember she just wanted all of us to grow up and marry Jewish and have kids and, you know, that were Jewish. And that was just very central to her values. And so, you know, I think there's other branches of the Jewish movement, Reform in particular, that are much more liberal. And we were not in that environment. We were in a conservative environment. And I think that that's actually the strange irony of the film, but which gives it something that is very relatable. When I took this film on the film festival circuit, I had countless people telling me, and I still get messages from people, Catholic, Christian, Baptist, Muslim, that say, you know, your mother, it was exactly like my mother. And I wish she could have come around. And I think that that's why it's important to see that my mom did come around, because there's still so many people who have these very harsh religious judgments that come from a particular interpretation of the Bible. And, you know, as strange as it may be, you could be so fully embedded in the gay community and still be homophobic. That was what I was trying to reveal in the film. And it wasn't, as my mom likes to say, it wasn't my finest moment, but it also, I think she understands the value in sharing that story in order to heal other people, and specifically other parents, so that they can come around and appreciate just their wonderful gay kids, or they're just wonderful kids who might happen to be LGBT or anything else.
We have just about a minute left, but I wanted to briefly ask you about the prosecution of your parents over the material that they were distributing. An employee of the store sent some videos to Pennsylvania. Federal prosecution ensued. Did you have a sense before doing the film how close your father came to going to prison?
You know, I actually, since you brought up John Weston, that you know him, I mean, really, my parents were represented by pretty much the best attorney that could have handled their case. And he looked me in the eye and told me that he wasn't even sure that they wouldn't be going to jail.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story, and there's so much more in the film, Circus of Books, which, of course, the name of the store. The store is no longer with us under the management of Rachel's parents, Karen and Barry Mason. Rachel, a great film. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about your family and the store that your parents had for decades. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. This was so much fun.
I enjoyed it. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC, Circus of Books, by the way, streaming now on Netflix. From all of us, have a terrific weekend, and we remind you, in case you missed any of the program, it's always available for podcasts wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks so much.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.